questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change. A leader's vision of meaningful change can make others very uncomfortable. So uncomfortable that they may even fight it furiously. Why is that when it's change that could better their lives? In this episode, Jonathan reveals both the answer and what he can do about it.
How might this change make some people uncomfortable? Change can be scary. Change can be jolting. Part of us may want the change, while another part fights it furiously. What makes your proposed change worrisome to the worrier within? I'm very glad that we end on that note, because that's where I begin. What makes your proposed change worrisome to the worrier within? And I think that starts with me. How might this change make some people uncomfortable? It makes me uncomfortable, and that feels right and proper, for all sorts of reasons. I'm talking beyond the little voices here of skepticism, correction, the little voice that have nudged me a little bit further to the left or to the right or backwards or sometimes slowed me down. This is something else, I think. This is more... Let's begin with scale. We talked, I think, very usefully about scale in our previous discussion, the sheer scale of the change and the dizzying gap between me sitting here with you, Marianne, talking about these things and then imagining what it would look like in the future. Just that the scale here is worrisome. And we had a very good conversation about how you bridge that one step at a time. But this is also about discomfort. How might this change make some people uncomfortable? At some level here, and I think it's a deep level, deep down, if we're challenging assumptions here, if we're challenging assumptions and assumptions that have been there for a long time and a part of the bedrock, have become part of the bedrock of the world that we live in, that breaking of assumptions is more than worrisome and uncomfortable. It's hard and painful. I think there's a worry here. Something is worrisome here in the breaking of those assumptions, where assumptions have become hard baked, where they've become part of the foundation, then they're no longer merely a guide for action. They've gone beyond perhaps their original purpose of providing guidance, values. Values are powerful in themselves, but they are also intended to give a shape to action, certainly a foundation to action. They give a glimpse that they are aspects of what the good life is for a community.
As long as those are shared values.
Indeed, yes. Yes, that's when they become powerful. And if they're written down in constitutions, it's because those people at that time felt this is what we believe to be true.
And they declared to be true.
Exactly. We hold these truths to be
self-evident.
Exactly. Yeah. Today. And so we write it down today in this document. And what happens there is over time, and I think this is the interesting thing, even if they're not shared, they become part of the foundation. And then they become part of identity, the identity, our own identity. They become part of the story we tell about ourselves. And so that makes the letting go all the harder. If you are breaking, I talked about the truth that comes with my vision and the confidence that followed makes me feel that it makes me know that we have to break certain assumptions. If we're breaking with the past, we are bringing down certain assumptions. Now, if those assumptions have become part of our identity as a community, the story that we tell ourselves about ourselves, then it's going to be even more painful.
So good you say that, Jonathan.
This is where a community says, but this is who we are,
mm-hmm. Who we've always been.
Yes. So there is not just worry here. There is pain here. There is probably also a deep sense of uncertainty. If we are going to one example, if we are. You can imagine people think, well, if we're going to attack the notion of competition or is rethink it, we're going to rethink it. Okay, I listen to this vision and I hear that we're going to rethink competition, see competition new eyes. Well, oof, that's worrying because, okay, people have suffered through an era of competition celebrated as the prime mover of our economy, that thing which unleashes our creative, competitive urges, entrepreneurial urges. This is what gets us out of bed in the evening, in the morning. Yes, it's okay. I accept that it's caused pain. I'm paraphrasing here.
Survival of the fittest.
Though. Yeah, all of these things. Mm. Okay, I accept that there's been pain, but this is the thing that produced years of economic growth. It produced mm-hmm. jobs,
sustenance.
Yeah. So I'm worried now. I'm standing here. I'm worried that if you come along and attack this notion of competition, well, oh boy, unless you got something good to replace it, what's the risk to jobs? Mm-hmm. What are you saying here? What are you saying here? We're going to live in a nicer world with more truth and more listening to each other. Great, but if we're poorer, yeah. then is mm-hmm. so I'm hearing the what I'm doing here is I'm hearing and voicing
good. So good.
The criticism. Mm-hmm. This is how it would make some people uncomfortable and angry as well, mm-hmm. angry.
Well, the clause in that prompt is another part of us fights it furiously.
Mm.
Their anger in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And adamancy.
Yeah.
No, you're not going to change.
Yeah.
I don't want this to change. Yeah. I may want that part to change, but I don't want this part to change.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Part
anger.
Of us may want the change while another part fights it furiously. Which already gets me thinking, perhaps ahead of the game, so to speak. But it gets
literally.
It gets me thinking about does a good vision, even as it breaks with the past and stands today on new ground, does a good true vision need something within it that offers reconciliation as well? I'm thinking out loud here. It's just a question. Mm-hmm. I'm just putting it there for a second.
Yes. If you can show them with your words how to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because let's play devil's advocate for a moment. I'm looking at the word uncomfortable in the question. How might this change make some people uncomfortable?
Yes.
Uncomfortable could be a relative state. Mm. You may be comfortable with something to whatever degree that someone else is not, right? So the opposite of comfortable or comfort is discomfort or uncomfortable. What if you've been in a state of lack of comfort for a long time, and that lack of comfort, you've known it for so long that initially it might have been uncomfortable, but now being without a lack of comfort, being in a constant state of discomfort, is what you know. It's therefore what you're comfortable with.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So when you talk about change making some people uncomfortable, could that be a good thing?
Mm.
If they are resigned to being in a perpetual chronic state of discomfort without even knowing it.
Yes.
A fractured state, for example.
Yes.
Within themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think we have to look within ourselves to understand how we overcome that, because we have to find our own way. We do find our own way to overcome our own resistance. Mm. So that,
we do, but what can the visionary do for them? This is amplifying them. Mm. With your ability to see,
yeah,
what they cannot yet see.
Yeah, I think it begins with separation. Separating people, helping them, gently prizing them away from this sense of identity. So that they're able to let go of something. It's that part of, if we go back to politics for a second, this is about avoiding the awful mistake, which people commit frequently, the trap that somebody falls into, where as you try to change course, let's say politically, this is not confined to politics, but if we're talking about politics here, it's that moment where the politician says, you were wrong, these people were wrong, and we're repairing that damage today. That's the trap. The answer, the better answer is to help people to see that they don't need to be defined by the world that we're breaking with. This is the danger and the damage.
Yeah.
The danger and the damage of identification.
Mm-hmm.
If we're breaking with an old world, if we're breaking with the past, breaking mm-hmm. with an old world, but we want to bring people with us into the new world, then we have to gently separate them from that feeling of identity.
Mm-hmm. On so many fronts. So if their identity is with their work, for example,
mm.
and whatever understanding they have of what that is, and again, those who live to work,
Yes.
If you are redefining what work is,
yes,
then you're going to need to gently separate them.
Yes.
Give them enough space between what is now and what was now, what was the past,
yes,
and what could be.
Yes.
And how do you create that space?
I think it's...
Or separation.
It's... I think it's finding the space, finding the separation between the choices of an individual human being about, to take your example, how they work, how much they work, what their job means to them in their life. Finding that space and separating that from the broader culture. Because when we talk about creating new conditions, mm-hmm, the new ground, that new ground and the culture, what's the first thing that we put on that new ground? It's the culture. If we talk about nesting, if we go back to nesting, we have new ground and then we establish a new culture. Out of that culture will come new institutions. Out of those new institutions will come new laws, norms, new traditions. And then ultimately out of that, you build an economy. Mm-hmm. Out of that, a new economy which comes out of...
To which everyone contributes and is recognized for their contribution because they, each and every individual is significant.
Right, exactly. But at the same time, that new vision doesn't tell people what to do.
Right.
And this is the crucial thing about a vision.
Exactly.
It's not a prescriptive... Yeah, my vision is now going to tell you what to do. Here are the new rules. Wake up, people. There are some new rules on the wall here. That's not a vision.
No.
And so the one-to-one conversation you would have with somebody who wants to devote their entire life to their work, who enjoys being consumed by the work, my one-to-one conversation with that person would be, that's okay. What you have done is, I'm not judging that.
No.
Because
and
that was
welcoming your diversity.
Yes. Yeah. That was your choice. In the world that I'm trying to build, you can make the same choice. Mm-hmm. But what I'm trying to change is the conditions in which everybody makes a choice.
Yeah.
What we're interested in here is the conditions of choice.
Lovely. Conditions of choice.
We should never, in my world, I would struggle to allow any vision which restricts somebody's freedom in a profound sense. We need to restrict freedom day to day for all sorts of reasons. Public health, public safety. Those are the most banal reasons.
Freedom of speech.
That's where it gets complicated. I'm sticking with the simple stuff.
Yes, with the simple stuff.
We must all drive on the left-hand side of the road. Or right. The right.
Exactly. And it's important there to know where you're at.
But that you need to know which side of the road it
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
Okay, so that at the most banal level, this is why the restriction of freedom is a good thing so that we don't die.
Yeah.
So if a restriction of freedom equals life, it is good. Mm-hmm. So, okay, we know this. That's
preservation
fine.
Preservation of life.
But at a deeper level, I'm not comfortable with the idea of a vision which sees in its mission changing people's behavior. Mm-hmm. There's something that's the little voice
absolutely.
That has that whiff of the totalitarian or the authoritarian. That's not what we're trying to do.
That's the opposite. So if vision is illuminating what it is for them, if there is light in that, shining a light on mm-hmm. what could be, mm-hmm. rather than command and control, quote, telling them what to do, could you be guiding them? And do you relate to the term guiding light?
Not sure. Yeah. Not sure. My very first, very personal instinctive feeling is, while I like that language, I'm not sure it applies to me and what I'm trying to do here. Mm-hmm. I completely get the idea. And certainly guidance. Guidance when it is gentle, when we are genuinely, genuinely trying to offer guidance.
Well, you're talking about conditions of choice. So if you're unveiling or revealing choices that they could not see, either because they never existed before or they were buried. So you're revealing choices.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And shining the light on those. Mm. So is that the guiding that you see?
We're not far off.
Okay.
We're not far off. Yeah. I'm resisting the idea of any one individual guiding.
Yeah.
Or even the vision guiding.
Yeah.
I'm more comfortable with the idea of opening up or creating new conditions, these conditions of choice where certainly in the vision I have started to articulate, it's there is a, you know, at the heart of the vision within the shared home is a bigger space for all of us. It's a bigger home. It's a more generous home. It's a more welcoming home. Mm-hmm. But within that, people must be free to make choices which are not in tune with
any one individual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My rejection of what is now, my rejection of the now, and my desire to break with the now is that I have a deep conviction that for too many people, they are having to live against the grain of the prevailing conditions of choice.
Yeah.
Too many people are being this or that, in spite of the prevailing, not just prevailing attitudes, but the institutions that have hardened around the view of our economic life, a view which sees education, for example. I'm going to take one example. A view which sees education as a means to an end. Education that prepares people for the economy. Education that gives them the skills for the economy. That is not in itself a bad thing, but it's just completely, for me, that is just so narrow and diminishing of the human potential, diminishing of the idea of what it is to be human. Also a huge narrowing of what education is and can be.
My father used to distinguish between training and education.
Yes.
And that's a huge distinction.
Huge.
Yeah.
It's all there. It's all there. And it strikes me how little we've talked about education, but I think it's for good reason, because we've held off. Mm-hmm. We've held off.
Yes,
I think you and I know that education is fundamental here to what we're talking about. And for now, the distinction you've made there between education and training is perfect. Mm-hmm. For now, that's a great place to park that for now. So it's this, it's going back to that one-to-one conversation with somebody who might feel targeted, somebody who might feel targeted and judged, rejected by the new vision. In my vision, that couldn't be true, because the vision is not pointing the finger, and it's certainly not pointing the finger at any individual or even group of individuals. it's more the sense that we have lost our way. We have allowed certain truths and values to be forgotten, lost, tarnished, misconstrued, hidden, deliberately hidden sometimes. And so what we're trying to do here is again, let's come back to this idea of creating a space between people and their own choices on the one hand, and the prevailing mood, culture, norms, values of the old world. What we're not saying is all of this has to go. We have to find a way to say to those people whose life feels most in tune with the prevailing norms. In our vision, our shared home, there will be a place for you as much as anybody else. And it may feel uncomfortable to you in the beginning. It may feel uncomfortable to you in the beginning, because in your world, you have felt completely in tune with those mm-hmm. prevailing conditions.
Aligned as well.
Absolutely aligned.
And profiting.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And so as we break with the past, we're not breaking with you, mm-hmm. and we're certainly not pointing the finger at you. That's the sort of one-to-one conversation over a beer with that person. I genuinely believe that. Yeah. So my overarching answer here is that we have to help all sorts of individuals, but perhaps also certain institutions, to find separation between themselves and their own sense of identity.
Mm-hmm. And at heart, Jonathan, change, to whatever degree, infinitesimal, small, medium, huge, large, necessitates letting go of something that you know, something that was, some way of being, some way of doing. Otherwise, there's no change. So when you think of that and in context of this question, how might this change make some people uncomfortable? Again, relative term, but at some point, in some way, you are asking them to not only let go of what they know that may or may not, to whatever degree, benefited them, okay? You are asking them to step into the unknown, because it isn't created yet, hasn't been created yet. When you talk about new ground, that ground may not be there yet. You're asking them to take a leap of faith, make a quantum leap, and let it go. So see how that can be frightening for people, for yourself as well. That's why we say change can be scary. And that's why even when, and back to visionary, when we can see the positive in what could be, part of us, because it's what we know, even when it's not ideal, it's what we know, wants to stay with what that is. So how do you move forward when there are concerns to satisfy? I want to jump from there to a question back to guiding. Mm. And I love that you push back on guiding. Mm. You see something in there. So let me ask you the next question then on that. If you don't see your role as guiding, do you see your role as leading, Mr. Visionary?
I can certainly accept leading. Leader, again,
good.
Immediately okay. takes you into a different place.
Yep.
With all the heavy charge around that. But to lead, to help lead, to open a new path. That, mm-hmm. Because mean, leading and guiding.
Okay.
Leading and guiding in many ways are about opening a new path.
Mm-hmm.
I like that idea, yeah.
Okay.
It takes us back to language.
Doesn't it, though?
Yeah.
So remember, we spoke of leadership as challenging the status quo. And you could, for argument's sake, you could strictly play, and it's a vital role, the vital role of visionary. That could be what your perception of your work, your contribution is. You just say it. You be the visionary. Help them imagine it rather than lead them through it. That's quite an important distinction. Now, you know I believe fervently that you cannot lead unless you can communicate. You can't just point and assume people will get it. You need to use your words. So vis-a-vis that, again, see in your head, in your mind, your vision. Now scan for a moment and see what is now on that vision. Do you see a gap between them?
The gap between
what your vision being realized is and what is currently today?
I think gap doesn't even begin to...
Thank you. Yeah. Keep going. Keep going. Describe that. What do you see?
Gap doesn't begin to describe the space between where we are today and where we need to be. Yeah. That's clear. And when you have talked about... you prompted me to get to the idea of breaking with the past so that together we stand on new ground. I've never had the image of walking through a door to get to that.
It's not one simple door. When you unlock it, it is.
No, and there is a real distance there, which is why I say it's a distance greater than a gap.
Mm-hmm. A gap could be mere inches, yeah?
Yes. That new ground in my mind, I have a vague sense of what that looks like. I do have an image in my mind. It's on the other side of something. It's not just through a door. It's really on the other side. And as you have said many times, it's actually something that we can't see yet. I have a glimpse of it, the new ground. So it's more than a, it's certainly more than a gap. Coming back to the people, the other people, those people, and I'm coming back to the card here. So the people, how might this change make some people uncomfortable? This is the question. How might this change make some people comfortable? And then the question is how.
Can you say that again? I think there was a misreading.
How might this change make some people uncomfortable?
Yeah, I heard comfortable.
Comfortable, yeah. How might this change make some people uncomfortable? And we've gone beyond that now as well by talking about how we respond to that, and we've talked about the idea of separating people's own life, their behavior, their attachment to work, for example, from a sense of their own gently prizing people away from the prevailing culture, the prevailing norms, so that the new world, the new vision, would not instruct them what to do, but at the very least would help them to see that what they're doing has a different place, perhaps, in the new world.
So not totally irrelevant or discarded?
No, not at all. Again, let me repeat to myself first of all that a true vision is not at the core of its mission is not to change the behavior of individuals. Again, that's something much harder and brittle. That's not what we're about here. But I'm now wondering if there's not another thread to this as well, and which is about answering this question: how might this change make some people uncomfortable? And if that's true, then what do we do? How do we respond? And I'm just going back to a previous conversation not that long ago, where we were. It suddenly dawned on me in a second that this, our shared home, is not built yet. We laughed about this. The vision doesn't say, here it is, here's the new home built, built for us to share. Welcome. There the door.
It's not a housewarming yet.
No, it's not a housewarming. Exactly. It's not a housewarming. Exactly. It's a vision of a new home that we share together. And I remember extending that at one moment and saying, it's testing the language here, it's our shared home because we built it together. Mm-hmm. We share in this home because we built it together. So I'm wondering if there's not a clue here to the answer, that if the new vision is breaking with the past, it's not breaking with people or any group of people or even any particular type of behavior. It's just breaking with the past. It's breaking with a path that was wrong. It's leaving a path that was wrong. That's what we're leaving behind. A road that had become a dead end. That's what we're leaving behind.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the new, on the new ground, as we begin to build our new shared home, I would want the people who feel uncomfortable with this moment of change to be among those who lay down the new foundation.
Yes, exactly.
That would be, again, my one-on-one conversation is let me reassure you, there is a room for you, mm-hmm, in this new house, and I want you to help me build it. Mm-hmm. I want you to help me build this because my, what I want to break with is not what you have done, mm-hmm, in this world. I'm not pointing the finger at you and what you have done and others in your group. Or what we're trying to do here is to build on new ground something that will be stronger, more sustainable, in my own personal vision, more in tune with our human selves. And in that vision, I would want people who are feeling discomfort, as I might myself, to let go of that discomfort gradually by becoming part of the new venture of building together.
Some may opt not to, Jonathan. It's their choice. But it's critical that if they do feel discomfort, back to unifying that collective and unifying within your shared home, that they know they have been heard. Not their fears, their concerns won't be quietened or calmed if they think you're not hearing them or seeing them.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And you're in a leadership perspective, giving them permission to feel it, to voice it. Mm. And then if they so choose, because you've spoken about the cracks within the walls of the current house and the shared home and how those fissures or cracks would be repaired. But remember, there are cracks within the individuals. So it's not on you to repair those. But sometimes only when someone can help us see the cracks that we've put, as I think Catherine had said earlier, a painting on the wall to cover the wall within us, only then do we see it. And by repairing it, do we become fully
us again. Yes, yes. And at the risk of going down into a level of micro detail here, but I can imagine a conversation. And let me deliberately try and make this vague. Where you would have a conversation with somebody and say, you made these choices and you, I've listened to you and you feel comfortable with them and you identify with them. And these are things that make you feel in tune, in harmony with the old world. Mm-hmm. I get that. But I can see other people who have tried to follow your path, but who for whatever reason didn't have your resources, didn't have your character, didn't have your good luck, and who have followed your path but have suffered. And if I scan the landscape, I see many people who have suffered because they've tried to be like you, but they haven't been able to succeed in the way you have. So this is not why it's not a judgment of you.
No,
but it's what we're judging here, and we are condemning in some way. Is perhaps the encouragement of a way of life which has caused pain to many people, even as they believed at the beginning that it would be the path to happiness and fulfillment. If I am confident in our need to break with this path, it's not because I'm judging you. It's because I'm judging the conditions
exactly
that caused pain.
Yeah.
To others who may also have they may have wanted to emulate you and do the same as you and be like you. All these things are good in themselves, but if there is suffering, we cannot tolerate suffering. So to this person, you will be free to continue your individual path. As every individual must be free to find their path. What we're looking at here is new ground, new conditions, new culture, where at the very least, and this is a poor measure, it's not enough, but at the very least, there is less suffering.
And even when your path is clear to you and has been wonderful for you, the minute you step outside your door, as you poignantly described, you're stepping into a community, and if that community is filled with suffering, then what? Then what? Do you want to live in a world where you have to close your eyes when you go outside because it's all around you?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yes, this comes back to the truth, doesn't it? If we try to encourage the family in the broad sense here, if we're trying to encourage the family to find the will and the courage to tell a more truthful story about all parts of the family, then that's essentially what we're saying here.
That's right.
That one-on-one conversation with the doubter, the resistor.
Yeah.
If you expand that to a broader scale, that this is what we're saying. We want our new shared house to tell a truthful story about itself, and where everybody can feel that truth. They continue. We lose none of our diversity. We lose none of our complexity. But together, we are better able, better equipped.
Because we each contribute to it.
Yes.
I think we need to add one more layer into this. Perhaps, are you familiar with the book Crossing the Chasm, or some say chasm? I don't know. Which do you say, chasm?
Chasm.
Or chasm.
No, don't know that one.
So there's a book, it's kind of an iconic book when it comes to business. It's been around a long time. Anyways, it's called Crossing the Chasm, and it's with view to when you have a new idea you want to introduce into the world, and it's in the context really of business, new product, you introduce it. So if you, let's think of a mobile phone. I mean, when you look around the world today, it seems everyone has a mobile phone, yeah? But do you remember there was a time when most, if they had telephones, were on landlines? And then if you scan your relationships, your family members perhaps, there were one or two who came home one day with something called a cell phone. Now, those you could call early adopters of a new idea. And they are the first to cross the chasm, always. Now, there may be something in them in terms of their willingness, greater willingness to adopt change. They are early adopters. They see what others may take a while to see. They're comfortable. They almost leap into adoption of it, even when they don't really know how significant it's going to be. And then there's a group behind them who wait to see those others, the few others, cross the chasm to know if the land is firm, secure. And then they follow. And now we have more people using cell phones. And then there's that final group. And they are really happy with the landline. They've used it for years, their whole life perhaps. Why should they give it up? Yeah, cell phone, but could be a fad. Who knows? It's not as solid. I don't even know how it works. So why do I need a cell phone? I'm in one place or the other. I'm in my office or my workplace, or I'm at home. I always have access to a landline. And then when you realize that mobile phones pretty quickly mean you are accessible almost anywhere, do I want that? I don't want to be commanded by a phone ringing. I want my solitude, my walks without a phone. And now look at where we're at, where you can't go anywhere without someone having their face, even as they're walking, in a cell phone. So think about crossing the chasm with your vision, new ground. And what do you see?
Let me answer it by looking at myself and how I see myself in the example you've just given. It's a great example. I think that the example of the phone is a brilliant example, precisely because it's so prevalent, such a central part of our human experience. It's no longer just a tool or means of communication. It seems to be a central part of how we experience the world. I took the decision a couple of years ago to break completely with social media. Not only because it was a moment where my personal discomfort, my personal rejection of that, of social media, was starting to be, it felt in tune with the mounting evidence of the real damage that was being done to our political and social fibre and our mental health. So I felt confirmed, psychologically I felt confirmed by the personal choice that I'd made. But it doesn't stop there, and I'm aware of a need to not only be at peace with my own choice, but also see it in its wider context and appreciate what I may be losing still. And I'm saying this because I'm trying to work my way back to this final group that you were talking about, which we might disparagingly call the stragglers, the hangers-on, the people who are stubbornly holding on to that old world. I can look at myself and say I'm one of these people now because I've stepped away from social media. Here's the thing. When I've discussed this with close friends, starting with my partner, I can feel a sense of caution within me where I say to myself, I get why lots of people enjoy social media. I get that. I get that even as we may have failed in that original mission of connecting people, or that the idea of connecting people may be massively outweighed now, buried beneath the bodies of the harm done by social media. Nonetheless, I do recognise that it has connected people. Yeah. How we measure this now, I don't know. But yeah, I still believe that there has been connection. I'm accepting that. So this is all about acceptance, an acceptance of the central role of social media for our politics, for our economy, and all sorts of other things, for art and culture more generally. So I'm not in denial of this. So I'm warning myself, be careful here. Don't. And I guess what I'm trying to do here is I'm trying to find my way back to my own strategy for bringing on the doubters, appealing to the doubters. It's this ability to put a gap between yourself and something bigger, a social reality. I can say to myself, okay, I have broken with social media, but I'm not going out there screaming at everybody else, you know, you must do this too. I don't feel that other people should follow me in this one particular choice. I think that's the key here. It's incumbent on me. If I'm true to my vision, it's incumbent on me to make a particular choice. Okay, right. I'm moving away from social media. I'm letting go of social media. But is that it? Is that enough? Or do I have to think about what comes next for me as an individual, but also if there's a complaint here, if I'm expressing some sort of complaint here, well, you know, this is wrong, is there not some responsibility on me as a citizen to say to myself, okay, fine, move away from social media. But what are you going to replace it with? What's better? Mm. And this is perhaps a reverse way of looking at what we were looking at before, of how we bring people with us who, for all sorts of reasons, are deeply resistant to the change that we want, that we believe in our vision. And I'm just wondering if part of the answer isn't there. I'm looking within myself here to see how I have dealt with or how I have experienced, how I have felt the experience of being of becoming a straggler, of feeling that I'm suddenly in that the final group who doesn't want to cross the chasm, who's resistant to change. The danger is that you harden within yourself. And this would help me to understand perhaps those people and find ways to bring them along. I say to myself that I don't want to harden. I want to avoid the danger, the risk, the trap, of hardening. as I turn away from what is, whatever we think about social media, it is a central part of our political and cultural life now. So there is a risk in any human who turns away from that mm-hmm. without thinking about what might replace it.
Right. And therein lies the difference, yeah? Because you speak of hardening, that means, among other things, an absolute refusal to see it. But contrast that with resolve. When you resolve to do something, doesn't mean you're hardened to it. So in your case with social media, you're resolved that there's no part of you that questions your decision, right? It doesn't make you hardened to it. It's also striking me, Jonathan, that when you spoke about conditions of choice, your very example of social media where you literally tuned out, I'm actually seeing quite a bit of that. It's happening more and more these days among people. But you're now eliciting by that, if others know you've done it, and of course this would be mapped to your vision, but in that example, if others know that you've done it, now only do they know it's even a possibility, a choice for them. They can choose whether to, but they didn't even know. My gosh, people today are actually cutting out, removing themselves from social media. I didn't know you could do that. Like, what happens to your world? Everybody's on it. Yeah. Can I do that? Yeah. And you're modeling that.
Yeah, there's a different voice there, isn't there? There's a different tone between saying, I left social media and, oh, God, I don't miss that for a second. Oh, wish I'd done it earlier.
Right, right. And there are people who would voice it that way.
Right. And all those people who are still on there. There's a difference between that and saying, I came off social media and it's okay. Mm-hmm. The world goes on.
Yeah,
I still meet people.
You're still in one piece. You're maybe in one piece more than you were.
Right.
Listening to all those angry voices.
And have I missed out on certain things? Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm sure there are all sorts of things, good things. I know friends who have made a very, very good case to be on social media. People are working in science research where social media,
the sharing
is
they're not condemning, criticizing.
Very powerful for those people as a way of finding their way to information.
Absolutely.
Very quickly.
I remember I was on the board of the Heart and Stroke in Canada, an initiative called the Center for Stroke Recovery. And in our capital city, they built a beautiful new facility for heart and stroke. And the head of it took me on a tour one day, and he showed me an area where there's a lot of science involved, for example, in coming together for stroke recovery. And I will laud Canada. It's doing phenomenal work in stroke recovery. So they had a new space. They had the architect design a floor of the building where it enforced, by virtue of the space, enforced scientists, all working on specific parts, to be able to come together and share. They added to that, so there was just the way the lab itself was set up, the labs, but also where they would meet for coffee, long communal tables. And he saw a huge difference in shaping the space, because in that world then of science, sadly, talk about competition, and I've seen this many times since, but it's about getting published, right? Your reputation, your career can rest on discovering something seminal and publishing it, not sharing it. And this in itself started to foster. And what happens when you share your research? You build on each other's. And voila, you have solutions you couldn't have come to on your own.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a wonderful example. It's a wonderful example. What I'm seeing emerge here in our conversation is that when, as we break with an old world, we are we must refuse to judge people and their choices.
There's a declaration.
Yeah. It is not about that.
Yeah. We and are, judge yourself. Yeah. You must refrain from judging yourself.
Yes. We are condemning. We are condemning a set of ideas and conditions and assumptions that were causing too much suffering to too many people. Mm-hmm. But we do not judge you. We judge nobody in their choices.
Right.
So as we break with the past today and step onto new ground, we judge no one.
Can we go back finally to this conditions of choice?
Mm. Yes.
Are you in fact adding rather than subtracting choice?
Yes. It has to feel like an expansion of possibility. Mm-hmm. It has to feel like an expansion of possibility. The individual's choice will always remain the choice of that individual. Mm-hmm. There is no interference there.
No.
Let's be absolutely clear. We're not trying to insert ourselves between the individual and her choices in any moment of her life. That's not what we're trying to do here. But we're trying to expand the opportunity and the possibilities of choice, the conditions of choice, and also change the mood, the temperature in which those choices are made. Again, let's go back to the feelings of this new world, the feelings of the vision. Go back to that question. It's long ago now, but it seems very relevant right now.
Yeah.
That in this new world, the conditions, the new conditions of choice, are a place where there will be people will feel less lonely, less anxious, not in competition with each other.
Doing their own thing, so to speak. I want to highlight something else, and it's coming back from a previous conversation as well. It is not your role as visionary or as leader. And by the way, people are now putting the two together, visionary, leader. No. They don't go together. They are, well, anyways, we'll go there later.
I get you on
you
that.
Get
yeah.
Me, yeah,
we can park it for now, but I get you.
Thank you. And transformational leaders, another one. That's what leaders do. Leaders have to have vision. They have to be able to transform. That's leadership, the essence of. So it's not your role to be responsible for when you broaden, expand is your word, much better. Expand the number of choices, the scale of choices. It's not your role to match choice to individual or to ensure that they make the right choice. This is where we now enleven people to be accountable to themselves for their choices. If they want to choose what is true to them, bravo. If they don't want to choose for whatever reason, absolutely fine. But it is each and every one of us then who becomes accountable to ourselves within that new shared home. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does.
And that gives them a choice. It gives all of us a choice.
Yes.
Even when you see what it is that may be true to you, it's your choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So can we wrap up on that question by repeating the question?
How might this change make some people uncomfortable? How might this change make some people uncomfortable? Necessarily, it must make some people uncomfortable. Why? Because we are breaking with the past here.
Mm-hmm.
We are not introducing some reform.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a moment of change. Mm-hmm. We are breaking with the past. And what we're breaking with here, and to some degree condemning, we talk about condemning a building, don't we?
Yes, we do.
We condemn
when it's so devastated it can't be
that's
repaired.
That's right. Yeah,
so uninhabitable.
Exactly. We're condemning something here that was wrong and that was causing suffering. We break with that today, but we don't judge, and we don't judge you.
The purpose of this Amplify question is to reveal to the leader what he needs to say to resolve people's real concerns about his vision of change. Why would Jonathan's vision make them uncomfortable? Well, some are uncomfortable with any change, as it means relinquishing the familiar for the unfamiliar. But they may also have specific concerns about his particular vision. In this conversation, Jonathan realized that his vision of change means breaking some of the assumptions that are a part of our identity, the story we tell ourselves, and that can be painful. As well, some are so in tune with what is now, they don't want it to change. It's serving their interests. And they can't see his vision of a shared home on new ground because it doesn't exist yet. Only he has even a glimpse of it. Seeing all of this now is a chance for Jonathan to help resolve it by what he says and does in his leadership role. He won't try to change their behavior on that new ground or tell them what to do. He'll make it clear that he's not judging them or their choices, just the conditions. And he has to help them feel that this is an expansion of possibility. It's all part of the leader's work in making a vision that's meaningful to them, also meaningful to those who can help them realize it. The leader's journey continues. Stay tuned. If listening to this Illumify Game Changer podcast is of value to you, please like it on this platform and share it with those who could ignite meaningful change. It's here, as am I, to be of service. I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the Leader's Journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Illumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Illumify's website at illumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change.